It was the year of deep geeking.
The year of Feedbackapalooza.
The year we discussed our favorite show.
It was the year without Zima.
The year of great tequila.
The year of puns.
And a year of more interviews.
It was a new chance for fun.
It was the end of the series.
It was the year we made it to Crusade.
The year is 2009. The show, Babylon Podcast.
Welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
I am Brett Filipek.
And I am Patient Zero. It's Arkle, everybody.
Yes, more familiar to the comment room and I believe the voicemails on Slice of Sci-Fi. We now have a crew of just eager beaver geeking voices ready to talk about the penultimate episode today, Objects at Rest. But we have a little bit of news, Tim.
Yeah, we have a little bit of news, and let me preface this by saying I debated whether or not to mention this because I didn't really get a definite okay, but Gary in Jacksonville is such an integral part of the podcast. He's an official contributor. Of course, everybody knows him from the endless voicemails through the Feedbackapaloozas. But he's been a longtime supporter, so I feel it's appropriate. He's been doing a lot of heavy lifting for the new open, and that's been delayed because he sent an email saying that he had a death in his family and had to leave to, I guess, go to New Jersey. So the reason I bring that up is because I just want to let the rest of the listeners know that to keep Gary and his family in their prayers, good wishes, whatever it is that you believe in, whatever great maker, God, or Valen, or what have you. But, you know, we just want to let Gary know that we're thinking about him, and our best wishes go out to him at this time.
Yes, Gary is very special to us here at the Babylon Podcast and at Farpoint Media. I can think of numerous occasions where just the way he said something made all of us laugh, and that is a priceless, priceless gift.
Yeah. So, and if you've ever seen any photos of him, he's got just the hugest smile that you've ever seen. It's really a sight to behold. It's a wonderful thing. So, travel safely, Gary, and we look forward to you getting back in whenever you can. And we've got a Feedbackapalooza coming up. That's fair warning to everybody out there. So we'll be hearing from Gary, I'm sure.
Yes. So, Arkle.
Yep.
Introduce yourself to our audience.
Well, I first made my mark on the Farpoint Media landscape with a really bad joke involving the Joust video game referencing the movie Network. I don't know if you remember that one, but that's pretty much where it started. That was the first time I'd ever called into any podcast. Up to that point, I'd just been emailing other shows. But from there, I eventually launched my own show that was called the MILF and Cookies Podcast that I very smartly decided to retitle about 15 episodes in to the much more palatable Geek of All Trades podcast, which is still running.
Yeah, I
think awesome.
That one was, yeah, that's great, but I imagine that's would have been considered not safe for work. Just title wise.
Well, yeah. The title had absolutely nothing to do with the content. It was just I picked it for the pun. But
yeah.
And
I find what it is.
And I got this side project going called The Casting Game. The latest episode actually just went into the feed today, where Christiana Ellis and I cast the movie version of Mer Lafferty's The Takeover. There's 5 episodes in the feed right now, and the current episode is up, and you can actually vote on that one at castinggame.blogspot.com. It's a fun little show. Gary was going to be on the very first episode, but he suffered a hard drive failure. So it ended up being just me and Bronze Thumb.
That's a bummer.
So, Arkle, when you emailed responding to our call for guest geekers, you picked this particular day, or this particular week, if you will, to make your appearance. Do you want to share with people why that is?
Why, yes, I do. In fact, the day that this episode goes into the feed, not the day we're recording, but the day it goes into the feed on February 3rd, will be 2 days after my 28th birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we're glad we could be a little gift for you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am older than I sound. I know I sound like I'm 14, but I'm actually 28.
No, I was going to give you 15, honestly. I was going to give you 15.
Yeah, no. It's like I told Pip Ballantyne the second time she was on my show. It's like, all the rest of my physiological parts changed during puberty, but my voice was independent enough to make it about halfway through before going, F it, can't make it.
Nice. Nicely done.
That's all right.
There you go.
That's all right. Well, otherwise, we're kind of quiet on the news front. JMS is still not working on the Lensman script, I'm sure. otherwise, I don't have any other announcements. How about you, Summer? Brett?
I got nothing.
All right.
Neither have I. So,
well, I'll tell you what. Since we've got such a crew here, why don't we take a break and come back and get into the geeking?
Perfect.
All for that.
Eight years on from Firefly, 5 years on from Serenity, you still can't stop the signal. Striding like a colossus into the new decade, conquering new...
That's a little over the top, don't you think?
Well, I guess, but he's right. We're still here.
Just not quite so much with the striding. Walking confidently. How's that sound?
Fine. Just as long as the signal stays a podcast all about Joss Whedon's Firefly and Serenity.
Oh, no question there. We're continuing to explore the verse, same as we have for the last 5 years.
But this year, with some new crew, new articles...
new interviews, new features...
and a new website, a new forum, and a blog.
But still at the same old address, www.serenityfirefly.com, and still coming to your MP3 player every 2 weeks.
Plus, we've got lots of our regular segments like News from the Verse, Broadwaves, The Terraformers, and Feedback.
And we want you to join us.
The Signal.
Helping to carry on building the Browncoat community.
It starts here.
The Signal.
Digging down into the most obscure facts and fandom, this is
And, you know, hearing that open makes me wonder, have we worked on a new deep geeking guest voice for Babylon Podcast Season 5 yet?
Yes, I have it here in the tank. I just need to build it. It is actually Edmund who submitted that.
Excellent. Keep it a surprise.
Okay.
I don't want to hear it yet.
Okay.
Oh, Edmund's doing a lot for us. That Babcast Bunch promo should be going out later this week, too. So.
Yes, indeed.
That classic. Was brilliant. I loved
classic.
It.
Classic. Classic. I don't care if it makes some people's ears bleed. I think it's hilarious.
Well, I think Edmund's range, his vocal range, if you recall his My Funny Vorlontine song, it's a completely different style from the Babcatch Bunch. And, I think Edmund has quite a range and he violates stylistic conventions, shall we say.
Don't we all?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, he's violating something. I'm not exactly sure that's convention, but...
Well, tonight's episode is actually the first one where I got all verklempt, like almost the entire whole episode. I did. The first time I watched it, I was like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. I literally just got done rewatching this episode not more than 25 minutes ago. And then had to, you know, rush to read my kid's bedtime story so we could record this. But you know what? I forgot just how good the episode is. And what really got me was the music.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why, but man, I think it's Christopher Frank was the person who did the music for the show, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And holy cow, it just, I mean, like, just tore at my heart, every bit of it.
The scene where Sheridan and Delenn have boarded the White Star and they swing around for one last look.
Oh, yes.
Music swelling through that. See, I made the mistake of rewatching this today at lunch on my iPod.
Ooh.
In a public place.
Oh.
So I'm sure nobody was really paying me a whole lot of attention, but it was like a lot of.
I bet.
You got weepy?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
I got to tell you, I do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I do the same thing. And next week's episode, forget it.
Oh, right, exactly. I'm bringing tissues next time when we deep geek on Sleeping in Light. So I should probably put some in reach right now. No, I agree with you, Brett. The music in this, and it's funny. There are times when it almost becomes maudlin, but it never quite goes that far. It always stays just on this side of sentimental.
Yep. Yeah, it's just ridiculously appropriate. And that's the very first thing I noticed when I was watching the episode was how much the music just got to me. And I mean it's a good episode because obviously things get tied together and we see it all pretty much end. But I still, you know, just the music alone puts me over the edge.
Yeah, the where we start to see the last goodbyes, where we don't actually get to hear the conversation between Franklin and Sheridan.
Nope.
That bothered me initially because I wanted to hear, you know, what they had to say to each other. But just that faraway observation, it later worked for me.
Yeah.
But what got me was the, you know, Stephen's walking down the walkway to the ship. He turns around. There's no one there. Mm-hmm. And he just keeps on walking. Like, literally, he's going to catch another ship and hitchhike to another place. And that was where I realized, I'm like, it's over. This is done. The I'm on the last two pages of the book.
Yep.
This is it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've made the same observation as you, Summer, regarding Stephen's farewell with John. And I liked it. It works because a lot of it is its counterpoint to all the other goodbyes that are stated and given to us. And generally speaking throughout this episode, one of the strengths I think in it are the counterpoints and why it doesn't just simply fall into over sentimentality is because there's, you know, for every smile and well wish for the future, there's something dark lurking in a corner.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I hear you.
So,
you know, the thing I liked about this, you know, even though, I mean, it's not, it was recorded, but Jakar's speech, I think Straczynski did an awesome job. Every time Jakar spoke, or maybe it was Andreas's delivery, but every time you just felt the passion there. And in that speech, when he gives that last speech to Talon saying, hey, you know what, lead the people with, you know, respect and lead them with, you know, fairness and honesty. That whole speech, I liked it. I thought it worked well. I thought, honestly, Straczynski did a good job with who he picked, you know, from a who's going to be the new ambassador for the Narn. I thought that was a good character because I didn't see it coming, which I like. I like when I don't see things coming. But I liked that speech Jakar gave. It was just a perfect episode for me. Honestly, I didn't feel at the end of that when I see a series end, I'm going to name Battlestar Galactica to be the one I'm thinking of right off the top of my head, where you watch it and I watched it and it didn't leave me feeling empty. Whereas I've had to watch the Battlestar Galactica finale 3 times before I sat there and said, okay, I'll deal with what I got. This one, wow. Even though it's not technically the last episode, really, I felt pretty good with it.
Right. I thought that was an interesting observation because Battlestar Galactica came to mind too. Now, not to get on a tangent, I generally liked the Galactica finale, but I mean, about halfway through the series, it was very plain to me that they were kind of making it up as they were going along. Mm-hmm. So that's why with that particular finale, I didn't have as many issues with it like some people did. But having said that, there are plenty of holes in that Galactica episode that if you look closely at it, it kind of starts falling apart. I also think of the various Star Trek finales, which were mm-hmm. one last slam bang adventure to yeah. either wrap it up, and the Voyager finale was god awful.
Don't get me started on that one.
but that was the thing. Here's with Babylon 5, you know, Sleeping Light especially, but Objects at Rest, you get the sense of this particular story is ending, but you also recognize that the stories for the characters continue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, Garibaldi, there's that shot of him, and he looks like he's finally, for lack of a better word, content.
Well, and especially when you if you're listening to Sheridan's, you know, dialogue that he's giving to his unborn child, and the part he's talking about where they flip to Garibaldi's, where they're talking about, you know, sometimes we make mistakes, but we have to pick ourselves up and we learn from them and we go on. And if we've learned from them and we pick ourselves up, we can be successful. And that's where they swing to Garibaldi and sitting there, show him there, looking content, reading some papers. And I'm like, you know what? Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Exactly. Perfect. And by the flip side of that, for me, the most poignant piece of this was actually Londo.
Oh, yeah.
Because at the very, you know, when he says his farewells, I mean, again, we know how his story ends. We saw it in World Without End in Midnight on the Firing Line, episode number 1. He says, here's how I end.
Yep.
But when he tells Delenn and Sheridan, you are always been my friends. Remember that no matter what happens. Oh, my God. That was just like...
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Oh. Oh. It just hurts because he can't say anything else. And then on top of that, when the two Centauri guards show up, you know they're not there to protect Londo but to keep an eye on him.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. And you realize he's not in control of anything.
That's right.
When it comes to it, and so this little bit that he got, even though he was really there just to deliver that urn, I mean that's really what it was about, you know. But you didn't ever doubt the fact that he really did feel like these were his friends, and this was really going to be the goodbye, the only goodbye he was ever going to really get.
Yes,
I truly loved that whole part of it. I thought it was just brilliant. And and the other thing, again, I didn't see it coming. You know what I mean?
You know, I didn't think you guys, what did you think when Londo first made an appearance? When he first appeared, Sheridan's looking out over to Zanor, and Londo appears at his back. What was your initial reaction?
I can tell you mine was, what's he doing there? That was the only thing that came to my mind.
Arkel, what did you think?
That was probably mine too. I mean, that was long enough ago that I don't quite remember.
Summer?
I think my initial impression was, did he escape? What's going on? my initial impression was, did he get away and we didn't see it? Or is he there to sow the seeds of suspicion?
See, I remember this vividly when I first saw this episode. And you know, subsequent viewings, I understood what was going on. But my first impression when I saw that was, this was some sort of spectral imagining on Sheridan's part.
Really? Hmm.
Yeah, wow. I never went there, man.
Not me neither.
He's there all in white. There's no announcement. There's no Emperor Malari of the Centauri Republic. Da, 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 da. Nothing. He just shows up. And I was expecting this that it would ultimately be like an imaginary dialogue that Sheridan was going to have that would be a counterpoint to all this thing that's going on. So it took me a moment the first time I saw this episode to go, oh, wait a minute, he really is
there. He really is there.
That would have been cheesy. That really would have been cheesy. You know, for me, I'm glad that we got to have Londo have his quiet moment, his goodbye. Because, yeah. You know, his previous departure, he didn't actually get to say farewell. He left for Centauri Prime.
That's true.
He got crowned emperor. He had to put up this front, you know, this show of face while trying to get his people angry at the Alliance for this, what he thought was an unfair retribution for something that wasn't generally their fault. And, you know, to not have him fade away under that cloud of anger and darkness was a very, very nice touch. And going back to what we were saying earlier about how comparing this finale or this lead up to finales to other episodes, technically the end of the story was at the end of Fall of Centauri Prime. So we have three episodes. You know, the story is ending. We're watching the epilogue. Sleeping in Light is technically the you know, 20 years from now. Yeah. Well,
the appendix.
Right. It's like Wheel of Fire, Objects in Motion, Objects in Rest are the closing chapter. Sleeping in Light is the epilogue, the happily ever after, everybody did this. This is what happens, but life goes on beyond kind of thing. Yeah. So we have literally two-hour movies to end the series. So we have more story, we have more chances to see characters process, deal with, and accept, you know, hey, things are changing, we all move on. We've had this period in our life, but and there's closure. There's satisfying closure.
Go ahead, Arkle. No, you go.
Well, I was just thinking that what you were saying is you know, that's a classic example of the denouement storytelling, and it just occurred to me that if Babylon 5 were airing today and the same thing were to happen, you know, this year, people would be complaining about it. Because I've just noticed it seems like any time, especially in the past few years, when a series finale has done that, when it doesn't just, you know, end on a big explosion, when they give time for, you know, characters to say goodbye to each other or whatnot, people just sort of moan about it. They did it with the series finale for Monk. I saw that in a bunch of forums. They did it for, well, it's not a series finale, but they did it for End of Time Part 2 for Doctor Who, and they did it for BSG. It just seems like somewhere along the way, the American television viewing public just became very anti-denouement. I just don't know where that came from.
Well, and to that point, I think that's one of the happy accidents in amongst many in the production of Babylon 5. From how I understand it, had Michael Hare stayed on the show, in essence, War Without End would have been the series finale. And as great a story as that is, it still would have been just another finale with the big adventure at the end and the giant firefight. And yeah, it would have been cool for, you know, the last thing to find out is that Sinclair is really Valen and the whole thing starts all over again. You know, the end comes back to the beginning. There's appeal to that, but it doesn't – distinguish itself the same way as it plays out how we got it. As Summer said, we've got basically three finales. And none of them are what you would consider action-packed. And as we discussed last week with Objects in Motion, the quote-unquote action-packed part of that episode, we all agree, was pretty lame.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And really, what little action there was in this one, which was, you know, Lanier's basically bailing on Sheridan when he was trapped in that room. That wasn't what I was watching the episode for.
Right.
You know what I mean? That really wasn't it.
Okay, now how many people this time around noticed that when Sheridan is helping that ranger out and the door closes, he's trying to get out, that he just kind of leaves the ranger's head in the gas cloud that's killing him?
Yeah, I noticed that too. I did notice that too, actually.
Don't mention it this time around. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, what the hell you are. Yeah, I saw that too. I will say, now, this was my one complaint, and I will say I didn't complain a lot about Babylon 5, but my one complaint about this episode was, you know, most of the things when there was a prediction about the future or there was some kind of prophecy, the way that prophecy came true was usually pretty compelling. The way that Morden, you know, and I think it was Day of the Dead, the way that Morden sat there and said to Lanier, "You're going to betray the Alliance one day," and he sat there and Lanier says, "Nope, never do it. Not going to happen. You know, whatever. You're dead anyway. Why are you here?" Okay, so in my mind, I'm waiting for Lanier to sit there and have to make some moral decision that's going to, you know, he's got to betray the Alliance. He's got to give information to somebody he's not supposed to. He's going to do something so egregious to the Alliance, but really, what it wasn't a betrayal of the Alliance. It was a betrayal of Delenn and Sheridan. Mm-hmm. And to me, those are two different things.
Well, no, the prophecy was you will betray the Anla Shock.
That's right.
His failure to act or his choice not to act is literally a stain on the Anla Shock and for Delenn, because she's, you know, the one.
But I'm not sure I'd characterize it as a betrayal.
Exactly.
Well, a betrayal of the Anla Shock's principles.
Markle, what say you?
No, well, my grandmother certainly considered it a betrayal of her, because Lanier was her favorite character, and I remember I was living with her when season 5 was airing. And I just remember the next day she was just in a pissy mood all day, just like basically all but cursing JMS's name for having Lanier do that.
Paging Mrs. Straczynski, Arkel's grandmother would like a word with you.
Oh, and then of course next week, you know, the station blows up with that perfectly good baseball diamond on it, and she was in a rage. For years she would go, and they blew up a perfectly good baseball field.
that's funny.
That is really funny.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is funny. I will say that was my, although I going back to it, that was my one piece of the episode. I was like, meh, you know, I didn't like of all the things they could have done to do that. For Lanier's character, if there was really going to be some kind of a betrayal, I expected something different, more, better. What say you? It just left me going, blah. You know what I mean?
I keep wondering if there was a different way to have done that, to maybe not have Lanier come so far down the hallway, to have him hesitate and go back before, you know, to stand there at the door panel, you know, he's 2 inches away from opening the door, and he's staring into Sheridan's face and then turns and runs. That just boggled me. I'm like, how can anybody do that?
Yeah, I agree. And to say nothing of the poor dude whose head's still in the gas cloud. you know, I mean, really.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I believe he was credited as Ranger.
Yeah, I saw that too. I'm a Ranger. Boy, you know, he's thinking to himself, hey, Ma, watch me on this show. I got my big break. Who are you? I'm Ranger. Oh, well. You know, not to make fun of the poor guy, but that was my only thing about the episode I didn't like, but quite honestly, I really wasn't watching the episode for that anyway. I really wasn't. I was watching, as you said, I was watching it to sit there and see those characters leave that station and experience that, and so the linear thing was meh. I didn't care.
Well, let me say this about the linear thing. I'll agree that the betrayal turns out to be less than what Morden signified. That's a whole other conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was significant, though, was when he calls Delenn to say his goodbye.
Mm.
It's the first time he ever uses the word husband when he's talking with her. Previously, your partner, exactly, if he mentioned him at all. And I did like the awkward, painfully awkward conversation between Sheridan and Lanier on the station.
Totally painfully awkward.
Oh, and you know what? I really get the sense that Delenn, that was a setup, in the sense that not that Delenn invited Lanier in, but just like, these are the two most important men in my life. It's important to me that they get along. I will give them some time alone so they can bond.
Yeah, and quite honestly, it had all the comfort of two guys trying to have a conversation at a urinal. I mean, it was just like, wow, this just looked painfully awkward to both of these poor guys, and they couldn't wait for Delenn to get back and for them to go.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and if you've never had a conversation at a urinal etiquette is you don't have conversations at the urinal. You know, so there you go.
Right.
But that was I will agree the prediction, the prophecy, whatever you want to call it, it's kind of meh. But the one thing I will say about Lanier and his approach with Sheridan, he did, and I don't remember what episode, he did wind up telling somebody that he loved Delenn. Who was that he told?
Marcus.
Told Marcus.
It was Marcus. That's right. And, you know, so here we are. We all know it. But and then he goes away and he goes his Ranger training either to try to impress Delenn or try to, you know, pound it out of his poor soul. But he comes back in this episode kind of out of left field. And it just was like, oh, well, okay. It just kind of left me not really all that thrilled. I felt a lot better with the Londo piece of that episode and what that did to me and how much that pulled on me. But I will agree the conversation that when Lanier called back to Delenn, that was, you know, that was, I did like that. I did like that conversation and how that went and his feeling like, you know, I've really screwed up here and I'm going to go away. And one day when I come back, I'll have earned your forgiveness. I thought, you know, that's what Lanier would do. I felt that was very much in character. And I think that's probably where my biggest thing was when Lanier left Sheridan hanging in the gas room, was it just wasn't in his character. He never in any point ever shown that he would do something that nefarious.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's why it was,
and that's not even nefarious. It's just that kind of blatantly cruel is not even the right word.
It's callous.
Mean? Callous, yeah. I agree with you. I agree with you, Brent.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to say, okay, here's the next one I want to run by you guys. Your feelings about I think we all agree that Jakar's speech to Talon was good, but what did you think of the little visual trick to pull Jakar out of the monitor?
I loved it.
Did you?
I loved it, honestly. And I don't know why. But I remember distinctly about an hour ago when I was watching it thinking, that's cool. I actually kind of liked how they did that.
Arkel, what do you think? What's your take on that? How would you react to that?
Well, I remember thinking it was cool at the time, but I was watching it again earlier today, and I didn't hate it, but I was just kind of meh on it. I'm not entirely sure why they needed to do that, but I mean, it was a good speech, so it didn't really matter. But
I think the reason I liked it so much is even though he's not moving all that much, the watching it on the screen, you know what I mean? Like when Talon's watching it on the vid screen there, it doesn't portray enough of the depth or the emotion or the body language, even if he's not doing much. But there's just a certain serenity that Jakar has when he's delivering that speech that I think seeing him full body, not, you can't call it three-dimensional, but you know what I mean? Seeing it a little more not on the screen, I thought it worked really well. And I liked seeing it that way.
I have actually changed my opinion about that. I understand better now why they did it. It was to get more of a single shot. You get the feeling of what Jakar is saying, but you also get Talon's reaction. And you can't do that flipping back and forth to, camera on Talon's face and then camera on the vid screen. And I don't know, it sort of grabs your attention when Jakar fades into the shot and you hear the voice change from recording to really him. Mm-hmm. And that sort of adds a little bit more poignancy to what he's saying. And like I said, I understand they wanted to get the side by side to get both Jakar getting across what he's trying to tell Talon. He says, okay, I've gone as far as I can go leading our people. It's time for someone else to pick up the yoke and lead them further. And this is, I've decided this should be you. And to get Talon absorbing what Jakar is saying and reacting to Jakar's faith in his ability to continue to lead their people, I understand that. But watching it again for this, I was like, yeah, there's something just not 100% keyed in. And right now I cannot put my finger on what it is about it that bugged me this time around.
Well, for me, I'm with you. I think the prime difference is the richness, and Andreas Katsula's voice is more apparent when he's quote unquote live, as opposed to the filtered quality that you would have on the recording that he leaves. Okay.
Yeah.
And I get that. There is just a resonance in the man's voice that adds so much depth to the words he's saying that it just defies description. So my guess is, to me, it's an awkward workaround. It's like somebody realized that listening to it on screen is flat. When you hear it projecting it, it's better. How can we make this work?
It gave, you know what it is? It gave it depth and dimension. When you hear the voice not recorded.
Right, but the setup doesn't make it easy to get that across. And so they resort to this artificial device to have Jakar materialize next to Talon.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. Although, you know what I did mind? Was the fact that it took Talon 0.68 seconds to pick the lock.
Oh no! I think he had a pass key.
Did he? I didn't actually. It looked to me like he sat there and like waved a magic wand over the thing. And
No! He slid a key into the lock.
He
reached into his pocket and pulled it out. I guess he didn't use it before because out of respect. And he's like, I swiped this when I was here last time. Let's see if it still works.
Oh no! My guess is more. At some point, Jakar said to him, "Here's the key to my quarters."
Oh no, no,
if
no!
If the
no,
time
no.
ever comes that I'm no, not no, no. here,
no, no. no. Remember, we broke into your place to grab your book.
Right, you're right. Yes.
He's
there,
like,
you go.
We broke in. We read the book. We made a few copies. Yeah. So, yeah, he's still got the skeleton key that he used the last time.
You're right.
That's right. I do remember that now. You're right. That's funny. That is funny.
I did like that. It only took 6.8 seconds for Veer to say he's not here anymore for Talon to...
Yeah, that's right.
Bust into the quarters.
Well, if you're not here anymore, I might as well see what's in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of that, one question I have is... I mean, basically, if the show had continued on just with, like, sort of all this new central cast, do you think that Talon and Veer would have formed the kind of friendship that Londo and Jakar had, or maybe a different kind of friendship? Or
no.
I just thought... Oh, okay, that was quick.
Sorry.
It only took Brett 6.2 seconds to come to that.
Yeah. here's the answer. Here's the reason why I would say no. The one thing that got Jakar and Londo to be where they were at the end was the conflict they both shared. And that conflict, for whatever reason, good, bad, or indifferent, was not there anymore. So it would have been, I think, there would have been respect there, but it would never have ever matured into the same level, I don't think, that Jakar and Londo shared. I can't see that happening.
It would be interesting to see what kind of friendship would have been formed had they approached them at that point for this Veer representing the Centauri Republic and Talon representing the Narn to forge an alliance of some sort.
Yeah, that's actually kind of what I meant. I shouldn't have said the same kind of friendship as Londo and Jakar, because that would just be completely different circumstances. But I just wonder if the two characters would have become friends at all, or if it would have been... I don't know. It's just something I've thought about.
I think there is a window of chance there, because Talon helped somewhat with the Narn resistance against the most recent Centauri occupation of Narn. And we kind of know that Veer is going to be doing a little bit of that on his own. So maybe there would have been a chance for some picking of the brains. Hey, when you had to do this underground, what did you do?
Yeah, right.
Maybe.
Very, very, very remote possibility, but I see an opportunity for that to be a doorway for them to work collaboratively together. That's just me.
Right.
It's interesting you say that. You know, the one thing I would have liked to have seen was, and obviously it didn't happen, but I would have loved to have seen if Lanier had become the Minbari ambassador. And the reason I bring that up is because Lanier and Veer had a very special relationship, both being the attachés or aides-de-camp, as you would, for their respective ambassadors. I remember that one time they went to the bar, they're like, and they both shared this drink of, and this couple lines of, commiserating their misery.
Yeah.
And they said, same time tomorrow.
Ambassador.
Yep.
You got it.
That's changing.
Yeah. I think if Lanier hadn't gone off and joined the On the Shock to prove his, alpha maleness to Delenn, that could have been a possibility.
And that, I think, would have had the opportunity to be an awesome relationship between Veer and Lanier.
And, just on a general observation, that shot, we talked about initially, the White Star looking into the observation dome,
mm-hmm.
and all the new, I say new, but all the new players in place. Man, I would have loved to have just seen one season with all those people doing their thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I would agree. And, I think that would have been – that's the thing that's interesting about Babylon 5, right, is it obviously this it had a five-year storyline, and that's all it had. And it had issues even trying to get to year five, so the odds of it going forward past that were slim to none. But what I liked about the Babylon 5 experience was – the fact that you just felt this was 5 years in the life, but the story did not end. It kept going, and it would have been interesting to watch that. I don't think that had that show been a massive success, I guarantee you the studio would have been begging Straczynski to continue writing for that, because I truly do think that there was more story that could have gone on there, and it could have just kept on going forever.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. In any show other than Babylon 5, that sequence that with the White Star looking into CIC, on any other show, you could practically look at that. You could look at that scene and practically see the blinking neon sign that says "Pilot" hanging over it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, spinoff. That's the spinoff of characters from the mother show. That is that. And looking at those people together, even though we have seen them over, you know, in the case of the Doctor, the entire series, in the case of Zach, the entire series, in the case of Tessa, three seasons, it would have been nice to have seen a couple of episodes. It would have been nice to see more of them later, to see how, because we don't know what happened to any of them except for Zach.
Yeah.
Later.
Well, and we know what happened to Veer. Yeah, you know what happened to Veer. That's true. But I would agree that would have been cool to see.
All right, we got the TikTok man saying we need to wrap it up. So,
any last thoughts?
I have one. Both last thought. What say you?
Who?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone? What? You know,
all right.
What?
Here's my final observation. Go ahead, Arkel.
I was just thinking, it's referring to a scene earlier in the episode. Wouldn't it be great if all CEOs ran their company like Michael Garibaldi?
Yeah, because I'll tell you right now, I'd be on the board of directors of several organizations.
I'd have ended up running Pizza Hut by now, I think.
That's
instead
awesome,
of leaving it, but yeah.
That's awesome.
Brett, you got any final observation?
About this episode. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, no, I think I've kind of, you know, the parts I liked, I think I've told you all about, and I don't want to beat a dead horse. No, I think I was good with it, and next week's obviously, I will bring my tissue box.
Absolutely. Summer, how about you? Any last thought?
Nope, same thing. It's the wind up. You know, you got a few, you know, cloudy, teary moments, but next week is the full out. Oh,
yep.
So yeah, we're
my final observation. I love how Zach says, "Mr. President." Like I knew this guy when, and he's proud to be able to say, "Mr. President."
Yeah.
So
interesting All observation, right. And I'm good with it.
Okay. What do you say we take a break, come back, and do an email and a voicemail?
Hi, I'm Kevin Batchelder.
I'm Wendy Hembrock.
And I'm Brent Barrett.
And we're the hosts of a new podcast called Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV,
where we discuss sci-fi and genre shows currently on television and some from the past.
We're fans just like you, so join us in our water cooler and back porch discussions of your favorite shows.
And strangely enough, you can find us online at tuningintosci-fi-tv.com.
Be seeing you.
Wait a minute. Isn't that what Bester says on Babylon 5?
Maybe. I never watched Babylon 5.
What? So you're a sci-fi geek who missed one of the best shows ever?
Hey, no details, no spoilers. I'm still catching up on DVD myself. Besides, we're not really experts or critics. We kind of think of ourselves more like guides or sci-fi Sherpas.
I don't carry anyone's luggage, though.
Yeah, me either. We're what we like to call the viewer's digest for genre TV.
Yes, we're interested in the conversation shows generate.
And speaking of sci-fi Sherpas, where would you find one of those?
Craigslist?
Oh, see what I have to deal with?
And coming back to wrap this episode up, what do we have?
Well, I got an email here. This came into the Babcast, and I thought it was very intriguing, given that tonight's episode was Objects at Rest. James writes in to say, I'm trying to find an a Babylon show I saw a long time ago. It's where John's son was 21 and received the urn with a parasite in it. Would you know the name of that Babylon 5 show? Thank you.
Was never filmed.
Thank you.
they never actually had the never showed that. As I recall, the closest you ever got was when the urn was delivered, which was this episode, and then there was the episode where John. Oh boy, when they went back to B4.
It was War Without End.
War Without End.
Glenn says that our son is fine. He's safe.
Yeah, and the assumption you make is that the reason he wasn't safe was because he had something going on with that keeper. At least I did now, during that episode.
In the third book of the Centauri Prime trilogy, that all comes into play. But it's been a long, long time. And I got to tell you, out of the three trilogies that were written based on Straczynski's outlines and everything, that was my least favorite.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget,
generally didn't like it much at all.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
We will pull out the pertinent parts for our listeners then when we get to those books. But yeah, also in, I think it's Deconstruction of Falling Stars, when they travel ahead 100 years.
Yes.
The talking heads and says, and don't forget that unfortunate incident with their son David. They never expound on the incident. They just assume, oh, and that unfortunate incident.
Right. But that you don't know that that's because it's the keeper or he just got caught in delicto flagranto with some current starlet. You know.
The proper pronunciation is in flagrante delicto.
Which you said.
Wow. That would have been funny.
David Sheridan's unfortunate appearance on the MILF and Cookies podcast.
Nice. Hey, by the way, Arkle, I'm stealing that title at some point. I really think there is a show there.
Feel free.
So, James, you obviously remember this show from about two universes over, the same one in which the iRobot movie that was filmed used Harlan Ellison's script.
Yes, that's an interesting, I guess, confluence of different Babylon 5 source material. I don't even know if there was a fanfic written about that.
Now, here's the other thing that occurred to me was the keeper in the urn. How long do these things lie dormant? You know, the implication is that they get peeled off of a Drak host pectoral muscle and then are attached to a to a victim, mm-hmm. and then are used to control them, but the host rock is around the corner somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. That totally changes everything. I know that my impression was that they were going to give him that urn when he was either 16 or 18, and then, you know, hijinks would ensue.
Mm-hmm. It was 16. I have it in my notes on the episode here.
Okay, it's 16.
So, anyways, there we are.
Great. Just when he's learning how to pilot a Star Fury on his own, or he's just learning how to fly, and he gets one of those things on him.
happens every time.
Yeah, kids with their driver's permit. Yeah. Yep.
Yes, if puberty isn't tough enough, you got to go through it with a freaking drag keeper on you.
Any other emails?
Oh, that's it. Mike, roll the voicemail there.
Hey, Tim, Summer, Jeffrey, and anyone else in the studio, Kurt and St. George. A few podcasts back, Tim, you mentioned Lita's eyes glowing white, and maybe they chose white because the Drak's eyes were already glowing red. When I first saw that, I thought of the movies Village of the Damned and Children of the Damned, based on an H.P. Lovecraft story, The Midwich Cuckoos. In those movies, these children were born to human parents, but they were clearly alien. They were all telepathic, and whenever they did something evil, like make somebody blow their brains out or set themselves on fire, their eyes would glow white. Now, Lita's eyes glowing white may not have been a deliberate reference to Village of the Damned, but I know JMS was certainly aware of those movies and the Lovecraft story.
Oh, interesting. That's an interesting connection there. Especially, you know, on top of that, JMS has gone on record as saying that Third Space was definitely an homage to the kind of Lovecraftian terror from the depths of space. So, you know, Kurt, you might be onto something there.
Well, gosh, a writer actually throwing a nod to something else in pop culture. That never happens. What are you talking about?
Does this mean that under the nice glowy exterior that the chewy center of the Vorlons is really Cthulian?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
That's why they talk so slow. They're half asleep. You don't want to wake them.
They're not gliding. They're sleepwalking.
That's right.
Calls for Kosh.
Well, they were sort of squid-like when they finally came out of their countersuits.
Well, everybody sees their own different god, so you know somebody's got to have a squiddy god somewhere.
Yeah, you know, Pock Morale were like, look, it's a squid. You know,
that's it. Cthulhu is Pock Morale's god.
Yeah,
there you go. Never even thought of that.
There's another mystery solved.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
That's awesome.
I got nothing.
Alrighty.
Well, that's all I got, so there we go.
That's it?
That's it?
Really? Wow. You're not even to an hour yet. What are you going to do?
That
was a rhetorical question. You don't have to fill the time, please.
No, yeah, you don't have to answer that question. I am reaching out to see if there's a couple more people I'd like to get on the show. We also had an offer. One of the, I think the lead guitarist from Sci-Fried is a huge B5 fan, and he's like, hey, just tell me when I'll come on. So we're working that out.
So when you run out of episodes, is that what it's going to be? Is basically you're just going to start pulling in every single fan that's out there and just give them 5-10 minutes, give them a show?
No.
No?
But we're going to put...
That could actually be fun, though.
Somewhere in a starship and send her out to Coriana 6.
There you go.
Coriana 6. That's awesome.
That's good.
No, I think what we should do for the final leg of the Babylon podcast, which could be, you know, season 6, if we just draw this out properly, we go and talk to the Hollywood people who have made their own TV shows and were influenced into wanting to get into television by Babylon 5. You know, sort of like Babylon 5, The Next Generation.
That would be nice.
That could be interesting.
I would love to hear the people who looked at the artfulness of this and said, wow, why have we not done this before?
Well, you know, even beyond that, one of the things that I've found most fascinating as we've been doing the podcast and interviewing people is the influence Babylon 5 has had, not strictly from a storytelling point of view or from a CG point of view or any of that kind of stuff, from the actual nuts and bolts productions of just getting any television show done, the influence Babylon 5 has had has been amazing. You know, B5 pioneered nonlinear editing. There's the Babylon 5 contract that's out there, which apparently allows a show to pay its union members not union scale just so that they keep the show going. And you know, Jeffrey and other guests have brought up a number of things like that. And it's like the influence of the show is there. People don't even know it.
Well, the complete conversation of the Day of the Dead episode should take care of a year.
Yes.
Very true.
Arkle, your thoughts on Day of the Dead?
Oh my God! No, we don't have time for that. No.
We are planning a Day of the Dead wrap up episode to sort of roll
Day
in
of
all
episode
ultimate fighting champion.
Been like 4 months of that. What are you talking about?
No, no, we're gonna nip it in the bud. We're gonna do one last chat on it. Hopefully after I get Neil Gaiman on, possibly. Still working on that too. And then we can close our book on it and let our listeners continue to argue amongst themselves about it.
Yeah, you guys are single-handedly resurrecting that entire episode because I didn't care about it until this show.
We live to serve.
We live for the one, we die for the one.
That too.
Okay, well.
All right, well.
Wrap her up, guys. It's done. Stick a fork in it. This episode's done.
I want to thank Arkel for joining us today and for Brett for joining us again.
Thank you.
It's a lot more fun when we have more people to argue with. I mean, talk with.
Absolutely.
So if you want to add your voice to this friendly melee, the email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. You can send in an email or send in your own pre-recorded voicemail. If you want to join in on the conversations, the website is babylonpodcast.com. Our forums are over at farpointforums.com. And as always, you can call in your own voicemail. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
Your Arkel's grandma got mad at JMS.
Rockin'. And we will see you next time on the other side of the gate.